המוכר זיפיו לעצים ויעשו פחות מרביעית השעה, הרי אלו של בעל הזיתים. Someone who sells his worn out olive trees to be used for firewood, and the person, the buyer, instead of actually cutting them down and using them for firewood, he leaves them in the field. Now, he had no rights to the field, really. He only had rights to the wood. And they end up making such a poor crop that he gets out of this less than one revit, one cup, basically, of oil for an entire saw. There's a machlokas, by the way, whether an entire saw means a saw of olives, an enormous amount of olives, or a saw refers to the amount of saga of a base saw, and that entire base saw produces only a cup of, or less than a cup of olive oil. Mechila. Whether anybody cares. So Harielu Shel Baal HaZeitim. That little bit belongs to the person who bought the wood. But if it makes a significant amount of oil, a surah the Eidlis Ta'ah, Zelmer Zeitai Gadlo, Zelmer Arti Gadla, each one claims the right because the one in whose field they are says, well, that only grew because it was in my field. And you never bought the rights to the field. And the other one said, well, but it only grew because it was on the tree, and the tree belonged to me. So there, Yachloku, which is why we bring this sugya here, even though it has absolutely nothing to do with the sugya before, because we find here a Yachloku that is a completely different type of Yachloku than Sumpas's Yachloku. It's Yachloku because indeed both people have valid claims to the result. Shatat Nahar Zetat. If a raging river rips out the trees from his field, and deposit them in the next guy's field where they took root, there, when it comes to the crop, here we're talking about a real crop, each one claims, hey, now those are my trees that are growing those olives, and the other one says, yeah, but it's my field that's growing those olives, there too, yachaloku. Now, hey, if he done, he asked the Gemara, in the beginning case where somebody sold the trees, what was the case? If he told the man, I'm selling you the rights to the wood and get them out of the field immediately. So he said, I'm like, coach the altar, take them out instantly. So then, the guy indicated that he was mocked on the trees remaining in the land, in which case he never gave him the rights to anything that would grow from the land because they weren't supposed to be there. So the owner of the land should get everything. And if he said to him, well, you can leave them there, I don't mind. When you get around to it, you can get rid of the trees. So then that means he's giving the person the right to leave the zeitim in the field. And how can the guy say, well, it was my field. You said that I had the rights to the trees and I could leave them in your field. Well, the case must be the Amalei Stam, that there was no stipulation as to the precise time that he needed to get the trees out of there. So, Pachot Merevius, if we're talking about that it was less than Merevius that was produced from the saw, Lokap, the Inche, no one would be mocked on that small amount of oil. Revi'it kap the Inche, but if there's enough of a crop to produce already Merevius of oil, he would be mocked. Omrib Shimimim Pazi. When we say revius, we don't mean literally that he should be able to produce a revius. We mean he should be able to produce he should be able to net a revius from his production, which means that we'd have to subtract also any caught that were involved in getting that revius. So in other words, we would need to deduct the cost of labor for the picking of the olives and for the squeezing of the olives and so on. So I mean, and then maybe 50% will go to labor. Maybe it has to produce two revias. But the point is that if he nets the revias, then already we have a problem of and there's no machila. Shatap Nahar Zeitav, if a river now rips out his trees, deposits it in another guy's field, so then we have now the discussion also of Yachloku. But what we're neglecting over here in the Mishnah is the question of whether anybody has rights to those fruits, at least for the first 3 years, because if they were replanted, then the first 3 years should be Orla, even though it's an older tree. It starts at the time of the planting of the tree. And nobody's discussed that, and that makes things very complicated, because if It was ripped out with enough land around the tree for the tree to be able to survive. Then it turns out that it's not really growing from the other person's land, because from the other person's land there wouldn't be any rights to the produce. It's growing from the original owner's land. And the Mishnah doesn't seem to discuss this at all. On the contrary, that's exactly what the Mishnah is referring to. The Mishnah is saying like this, that the Mishnah is referring to a case where the trees were uprooted together with sufficient ground around the roots to be able to survive. Now they were deposited in the other guy's field. When the Mishnah says Yachloku, it was not referring to the first 3 years. It's only referring to after the 3 years. Certainly during those 3 years after the flood, everything belongs to the owner of the tree, because the Omar, like, he can tell the person in whose field they grew, if you had planted this tree for the next 3 years, would you have been able to eat any of the tree? Well, wait, what kind of sign is that? Why can't he say back to him, hey, buddy, if I would have planted, you're right, for 3 years I wouldn't have had anything, but after the 3 years I would have had everything. You think it's worth it for me to have your trees? For what? You're not letting me have anything during the first 3 years, so I might as well have planted my own trees. And now, after the 3 years, you're going to ask for half of the produce, because they're your trees. I could have planted my own saplings and had produce after 3 years. What do I need you for? The only reason I allowed your trees to remain in my field was because I figured I was going to get the first 3 years of produce also, so it was worth it for me. But if I'm not going to take anything for the first 3 years, then I want the whole thing afterwards. Then it doesn't make any sense what you're saying. So indeed, we're doka this. You say that's true. So now, I demand, you should split it with me. So that can't be the relationship to the first 3 years. When Ravin came along, he said, what Reish Lakish said was this, that the Mishnah that says that you split it is talking about during the first 3 years where there was sufficient ground for it to survive from the original field. So that's why you split it. After 3 years, we view it as being entirely in the field of the new person. So I call the Balakarka, the Amalei, because he could say to him, look, had I planted it myself, would I not have been able to eat this entire thing for myself? After 3 years, why should I share it with you? Well, why can't the other guy say, well, if you had planted, you wouldn't have gotten anything the first 3 years. Now I'm letting you eat half during the first 3 years in order that we should continue to share after the first 3 years. And so why can't he say, therefore I bought the rights for after the 3 years too? No, that's not a taina, because the owner of the field can tell the owner of the trees, had I planted now saplings, those saplings wouldn't have caused any problems of shading on the ground, and therefore during these 3 years, I could easily have planted around the roots of these trees without bothering them, beets and other greens that wouldn't have disturbed the roots of the trees. And I didn't get those because of your big monstrosities that were here, and therefore I want my share during the 3 years. That's why we had the share, not so that we should share afterwards when I could have had my own and still had the use of the land during the 3 years. Omar Halas, they tie on Inotel, Intromino. If the other guy who owned the trees comes along now with a truck and a winch, and he says, okay, I'm pulling my trees out of this field and taking them back, we don't listen to him. My time of why don't we listen to him? Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The reason we don't listen to him is because since this field originally didn't have any trees there, and the original one did have trees there, we assume that when the guy pulls back his trees, this field is going to remain fallow, and we don't like that in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, if the first guy wants trees, let him replant trees. And this is just a takona, no reason other than concern for Eretz Yisrael. We want Eretz Yisrael settled. To go and do a trick or rather, man, that kind of reasoning needs a great man to say, because ain't nobody going to figure that out. I mean, we certainly would have thought it had something to do with the trees being in the land, that it weakened the land, and therefore he owes them to leave, allow the trees there, and so on. And we'll see, there isn't Monty Homer who says that later. So, I mean, if you want to say something out of left field like that, and you need somebody like Rabbi Yochanan to say it. And because of that, we bring another example of a related sugya, which also we say Tzricha Rabba, and also has to do with Eretz Yisrael. It's not awesome. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, we have also a somewhat similar idea in which, in Dumai, we learned that it says on the Kabbalah, Sadeh Avotav Minanokri, somebody who enters into a sharecropping agreement on a field that had been in his family, and he enters into this agreement with a goy who now owns the field, Ma'aser v'notenlo. He has to first take off Trumas and Maestras from what it is that he is growing before he gives the share to the goy. Which means that this is a terrible expense. Right? So basically, it means that he's losing 11%. I was assuming that he was sharing, nor is the total of Maestras is 22%. If you include Maestras, right, Trumas Gedolah and Trumas Maestras and Maestras Risha and Maestras Sheni. So now, like this, he'd only be taking off on a 50% share agreement. He'd be taking off 11% of the total, and he'd be able to give the goy without taking off from his mises. Now he's got to take 22% off the total, and give 50% of what's left. The poor guy has almost nothing for himself, 28% for himself, out of working the whole field. This seems outrageous. No, he entered into a sharecropping agreement with a goy. The goy, we're assuming now, owns the field that once used to belong to his family. No, the Jew's family, who entered into a sharecropping agreement. So now, we thought that when it says Te'avotav, it doesn't mean literally belong to his family. We thought Te'avotav means a sort of inherited Yisrael. And the reason we're calling it Te'avotav is for the emotional connection, meaning it was a field that belongs to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. In other words, a field that was promised Avram Yitzchak Yaakov that is now in the Rishus of a Goy. And furthermore, it was assumed, therefore, that what Rabbi Yehuda was saying like this, Rabbi Yehuda must hold Ein Kinyan Enochri Be'eretz Yisrael Av Kiyah Miyad Ma'aser. There is a major question, as we've seen very often elsewhere, about whether a Goy has Kinyanim in Eretz Yisrael. If a goy can have a kinyan in Eretz Yisrael to remove Eretz Yisrael from its kedusha in terms of maaser, then the chiyuv over here of taking maaser at all on the entire field would be only a chiyuv min rabbanan. So we thought that what the meaning behind all of this is that Rabbi Yehuda holds the goy does not have such a kaya, which means that the field remains Eretz Yisrael chiyuv, and therefore there's a diraita on the owner on the land itself that's Machayev these pharaohs in Trumas and Maaser. Furthermore, Rabbi Yehuda must hold that Mikabel kechocher dami. A Mikabel, a sharecropper, would have the same din as a chocher. Now a chocher is a leaser of land. The difference between him and a sharecropper is that a sharecropper pays only a portion of the actual produce. A chocher pays an actual amount that is set, whether the field produces or doesn't produce. A chocher pays an amount in cash, but it's essentially the same thing. A chocher means a chocher for tula, except that it's a guaranteed tula instead of dependent on a percentage. But so if it were literally a chocher, so then we understand ma chocher bein avad bein lo avad. Boy, Isura Yumeitam, right? Just like a chocher, whether the field had made any fruit or had not made any fruit. So, therefore, he would have to take off Meiser and give it to him, because otherwise he would be Poreakovatotami. He would be paying off an existing debt with money that ought to be going to Trumas and Maaser. Right? Now, we know we can't do that. So, given that this field is Chayav Midiraisa and Trumas and Maaser, and I owe a set amount of money, how can I take what ought to be taken from the Maaser from and use it to pay up my debt, since I'm not paying him a share? Okay. So what we thought was that Rabbi Yehuda extended this halach, and he said, since midiraisa, you'd be chayav if you were a chocher. So if you're a mekabel, we gave you the din min rabbanan like you're a chocher. That's what we thought the logic was in this whole thing. So So you were being machmer now that it's as if he's a poreach chov, and he has to take off mice and give it to him. Amalei Rav Kahana Rav Papi, Rav Kahana Tainet Rav Papi, or some say Tainet Rav Zid. This doesn't make sense because in a brisa, a lot of Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ag Mekabel Steyavotav Mimetzik Nochri. Now over here the case becomes zeroed in a little bit more. Here it says somebody that enters into a shared cropping agreement on a field of his forefathers, again, whatever that means, from a metzik. Now a metzik is a mafia, but not somebody that bought the field. He was metzik the field. He stole the field basically from him. Maaser v'notenlo. So now, according to your explanation, it has nothing to do with whether he's a metzik. It has to do with the general question of whether Yesh Kinyan Yaakov merits his role. A metzik, for sure he didn't buy it. So according to you, Maaser metzik, a field ain't metzik nami. You're claiming that a guy never has a Kinyan to plot you from mice, and then what would this have to do with a metzik? Therefore, it obviously is unimportant to us whether Yesh Kinyan, so you could even say Yesh Kinyan and offer Beretz Olaf Kinyan Maaser. Furthermore, you could say that even if Ein Kinyan, Mekabalat Kekol Kedami, and we would never extend the din of having to pay off to somebody the sharecropper where he's certainly not using to him as a mitzvah to pay a debt, he's giving the owner of the field as a goy the part that belongs to him, but he has to take off mitzvah for a goy. So nothing to do with what you said. When it says Te'avotav, it doesn't mean a field in Eretz Yisrael. It means his family's Yerusha. That's what it means. It means Te'avotav mamash. And it's a special halacha on Te'avotav. And only he, nobody else who would be sharecropping this field would we say such a thing about. Only he, the Rabbanim, sign to pay this additional amount. Now, I will tell you the end of the Gemara before we get there, because otherwise the whole thing seems crazy. The point over here is this. We assume that in a case of a metzik and somebody who really owns this field, it goes in the family, we want to encourage a situation whereby he will raise the funds to rebuy his field. And we assume that because it's a metzik, he's not holding out for a real sale. He took the field because he's trying to get some money. So, okay, so he's going to give him a decent deal on the field. It's not as if we have to persuade the guy to sell a field that he really owns. He doesn't really own the field. He doesn't want it to get the court. He doesn't want anything. Okay, fine. What are you willing to give me this field? I want to pay off. Exactly. That's a simple extortion. So, therefore, if the guy will enter into a normal sharecropping arrangement, he'll be satisfied with that to remain on his forefather's field. What have I got to go now and get into debt? At least I'm attached to the land, so I have to give away 25% every year. So that's an easier extortion for me to pay than to actually pay the guy off and get him out of here. We don't want that. We want the guy out. So therefore, for anybody else, he'll say, no, the heck with it, I'll go work another field. What do I need to pay extra to take off mice? But this guy, since he has an emotional connection, we could squeeze him to go ahead and to buy it back from the guy. That's really the point over here. According to Rashi, there's a different point according to Tosis, which I'll get to at the end. So there, but let's just see how the Gemara develops this. So we pretend that it's a fine. We call it a fine that the Rabbanim put on him. The fine is to encourage him to Aydi the Chavivi Aleh, since he wants very much emotionally to have this earth, Tafiv the Ozil Mekabala. So he would be willing to pay extra money to be a sharecropper on it. Now, of course, that's not the end result. But what we're saying is that we have a problem of also, if we squeeze too much, nobody's going to work this field, you see? So he's willing to pay extra in order to be a sharecropper, but he's not going to be happy with it. So therefore, in the end, as we'll see, he'll take out loans and he'll buy his back. Nobody else would be willing to enter into the deal in the first place. So it won't do any good to encourage other people to buy the field back from a guy because they just will avoid the arrangement. You understand, but what did he do wrong at the beginning of it? Not again, because I told you in advance what it really means, right? Gemara hasn't explained what it means. So the day might time a Rabbanu. Why did the Rabbanu find the man? What did he do wrong? Says the Rebbe Yochanan, that doesn't mean they find him. It means that they treat him as if it's a fine. Today should say, hey, Varavia, though, we want this field to be owned by him. Bara lashon of brura. It should be absolutely clear that it's his. Get the metzik out of here. Now, Tosfos has a completely different notion. He has not bara, but he has bora with a vav. Bora means that it should lie fallow. Meaning, what we're trying to do is, and this fits in much better into the previous piece of we don't want people sharecropping it. He is ready to sharecrop it, so therefore we have to make it harder for him to sharecrop it. So other people, we say, look, this field, a guy goes to take the field, nobody's going to be working this field. That's all. We're not going to pay this guy to encourage this type of behavior of goyim extorting fields from Jews. So if a goy extorts the field, let him work the field. Which is, that's not what job is. He's not in the extortionist is not in a farmer job. He's an extortion. So Mamelo, the light fowler, won't get anything out of it. For other people, if we tell them, look, this field's not available, they'll listen to us. This guy says it's chaviva, right? We have to fine him. Meaning, we have to see to it that he doesn't allow his emotions to overcome our suggestions that it's a bad idea for him to be farming this field. That's the point. And therefore, we want to make sure that this field is left fallow in order to get the basis out of there. That's what it means, going to Tosfos.
When they'll sell for a cheaper price, is that the idea?
Yeah, or he may just let go, whatever, but it certainly is not going to be worth it for him to extort a lot for it. And on this, I'm Rabbi Yemi, I could go on that week or Rabbah. Whew, that kind of logic requires a great man to tell us. So certainly that's not what we would have thought. We would have thought that it has to do with the dinim, about Mekavo, Kekoker, with the Yeshkin, and Layakum, there's a throw, and we would have gone around to that for a couple of months trying to figure out how it works out, a little bit of Rabbi Yehuda, but nobody would have come up with this out of left field. Somebody who goes into his friend's field and he plants trees in there without permission. So Rav said, we estimate cost versus improvement value, and he takes the lesser of the two. Shmuel says, no, listen, we estimate what it's worth for a man to get somebody to plant trees in his field. And Rafat explained, I'm Rafat, they're not arguing. The point over here is that if you have a field that does not really produce well for grain, it's a rocky field, and so the only thing it's good for is trees. Somebody goes along and he plants the field for you with trees, which is anyway all you're going to do with it. So there Shmuel says, if that's the case, okay, so what would a guy be willing to pay to have someone do that for you as a service? So let me pay it out to this man. Whereas Rob was talking about a field which could be used for Shmuel as well. So the guy said, well, I don't know if I want the trees in my field anyway. I mean, so there we say, okay, but the fact that he improved your property, so he's given the lesser of the cost, either his cost, in which case you'll take the additional value of the improvement, or the improvement, in which case you won't get back what you should be paid, but at least you'll have, the fact is, it's there in your research, so you have that value. And the truth is, Rav never said this psak openly. We just analyze it, analyzing the Pisei Halakas that came out of Rav's court. So in looking over the psak from Rav's court, we could see that this must be what he held, because Yahudi also returned to Rav, there was a guy who was being sued by someone who had done this, that planted trees in his field. He comes to Rav's court. So Rav says, okay, Zil Shumle, go and estimate what its cost and what the improvements were. Amalei Lovina, I don't want to. Meaning I'm not interested in having trees in this area. I could have used it for Kruah. So then Rav said, okay, so Zil Shumle the other ala kaktona. So find out what's the lesser of the two. Pay him the lesser. Amalei Lovina, I don't want trees at all. He didn't give me any. I'm going to have to go rip them out now. What are you telling me I should pay? I don't have to pay him a dime. So fine. So Rav let him go, based on that tyrant. He checks a month later. He finds out the guy has put up a chain fence around it, and he's doing very happily with those trees. So he calls the guy back to court. You have now indicated by your actions that you're quite happy with those trees. So I'm going back to my original spot. Now you're going to pay him the greater of the two, of his cost of the improvement. We have the same case. Somebody goes down to Knei Ubnei, not a Knei Ubnei, what do they call that thing? You know, in the trap, what's that thing where they have You know, Banayev's cousin, where they go take over old Kurva.
There's
no Kurvanos. So he goes down into this guy's Kurva and builds it without his rishus. And then he comes along, and a year later he says, well, I've decided to take back my wood and stone. In effect, destroying the building, obviously. It's hard to do that without destroying the building. So what's the din? Rav Nachman omer shamim lo, Rav Sheshes omer ein shamim lo. Hevramachlokes, Rav Nachman and Rav Sheshes, as to whether he has a right to remove his material. Oh, so that's a machlokes about what the guy would have to pay if he doesn't, whether it's the same as the field or not. We ask on this, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says that there's a machlokas Beishamay Beishilo. Are you trying to tell me that Rav Nachman, who says Shominlo, is going according to Beishamay with the Omar? To Beishamay? Answers the Gemara, no, who the Omar ki Aitana? Rav Nachman was relying on another Taina who doesn't hold that this was a machlokas Beishamay Beishilo. The Tanya Shom Imlo, give Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Rav Shimon ben Elazar says everybody agrees Shom Imlo. That's what Rav Nachman was relying on. It's only Rav Shimon ben Gamliel who reported that Beit Shammai Omrim Shom Imlo, Beit Hillel Omrim Ein Shom Imlo. Okay, but what's the bottom line? La Alokha, my hobby, hello? Om Rav Yaakov, Om Rav Yochanan, Babayit Shom Imlo. Somebody who built a churva, we do listen to him. Besadeh Ein Shom Imlo. But if somebody who wants to uproot trees that he had planted, we don't listen to him. My time on Yishum, Yishuv, Eretz Yisrael. The reason is, as we said before, it doesn't point out, even though Rav Yochanan already said that before, right? And that's the Torah in the Braisa, that we still need to know this over here, that there's another Mandiyomar who says that the Torah is that the Svar over here is because he has weakened the ground. In which case, if he weakened the ground, then that would apply even a Chutzlar. So, my Benayu, Ike Benayu Chutzlar. The difference would be whether this would also mean Chutzlar. Since you plant the trees, and the trees have been nourished by my ground, you can't come along now and take the trees out saying that you want your trees back. Because you've damaged my land by putting the trees there.
Planting fields is called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, but planting a house is not. Building a house is not.
Building a house is certainly called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael.
Why is he allowed to destroy the house? And we don't know.
Yeah, but it's not. Well, you're saying, why isn't the binyan of a churva the equivalent?
He's
asking, why shouldn't it be the equivalent? What's the difference between the two?
There's nothing there. It has pressure to go.
And the Chulti, you will banach on the Chulot Yerushalayim, and has a potential to be rebuilt. Right? But, I mean, you see from here clearly that the din the truth is there may be another Svara, but certainly the closer you get to the actual earth, the greater is the meaning of the Yishuv. There may be another Svara, which is that when it comes to a place to live, if somebody needs a place to live, well, Mike is going to end up building it. In other words, it's more likely that it will be rebuilt. I don't know. It's certainly a very interesting point. Now, this Mishnah is written in a way that makes it almost impossible to understand. And we'll see that the meaning of the Mishnah is very different than the words seem to appear. Somebody rents a house to someone during the rainy season, cannot get him out of that house. Now, what it seems to be saying is minachag v'ada pesach. He can't get him out of the house during the winter, whereas b'yamot hachama, during the summer, he can get him out of the house after 30 days. Now, the truth is it doesn't mean anything of the sort. What it actually means is that if somebody has rented a house to a friend during the time of the b'yamot hagshamim, if he hadn't given him 30 days advance notice during the summer, he can't get him out. That's what it really means.
I mean, even though you only rent him for the winter, you can keep it off summer long?
No. You can't get someone out during the winter unless he had 30 days advance notice during the summer.
Before he went in?
No. Before he needed to get out. He had been renting your house and...
during the winter.
No, during the winter and summer. It doesn't matter. Now you want him out. So you tell him 25 days before the winter, by the way, I want you out. He says, I'm sorry, I needed 30 days to find a house, and houses are not available at this time of the year because everybody has already signed up. So if you wanted me out, you should have told me 30 days before, and you didn't. And therefore, I'm staying through the winter, whether you like it or not.
It's okay to keep somebody out in summer when the sun is vertical in the winter.
No, it's not because of the sun. It's because that's when houses are available. Just like today. And people are moving during that period. They don't move during the winter. It's the middle of the school year, so on and so forth. Nobody? So up until September, it's easier to, you get out. After that, you know, you have to be very lucky. Yeah, that's when the market crashes, basically. Okay, that's what it ends up meaning. The Gemara is going to explore various alternative interpretations, but that's what we come out with at the end. Ubikrachim, if you're in a large city, and in a large city there's always a housing crunch. Everybody's always moving. So if you're in Manhattan, it doesn't matter whether it's Yimot HaChama, Yimot HaGeshamim, you always would need a full year advance notice. Shneimasar Chodesh. Ubachanuyot, if you're talking about a store, then whether you're in a large city or a small town, it wouldn't matter. You'd also need 12 months. It's very difficult there to get a guy to move for the simple reason that once a guy moves, it's not a problem of finding the right property. It's a problem of once a guy moves, you're going to find it very difficult to collect on the creditors because people relate to the store as the store. If they come back to the store and he's not there, and he says, you can find me at, you can bet your bottom dollar, they ain't going to find you. So in other words, the store relates to his neighborhood, and he gives credit in his neighborhood. The moment he's out of the neighborhood, he'll never get his money. So if he has 12 months notice, he can start collecting his debts. And if you're talking with Shimon Gamilomer, if you're talking about a Chanucha Machtonim, if you're talking about a pizza shop, or Tzabayin, or where a guy is doing dying, you need Shalosh Shanim. And the Gemara says Shalosh Shanim is because Hakafatan Luba, which for Pashtus means they give extend a lot of credit, which doesn't really make sense. That's how Rashi understands the Gemara, but there are others who learn Hakafatan Luba means it is such a problem moving those kind of stores because you have to find a place where you can put in a big oven, where you have wet fuel, where you have zoning, and the same thing for the Nachtom, you got these big vats, and it means it's gonna you need a large warehouse, and it's got to be in an area that they allow for indoor fires and so on and so forth. So therefore, you have to give them 3 years. And Hakafatan Merubah means the turnaround is very complicated. Now, so first we take this Kipshuta, which is the Mishnah. So we're saying, now, what exactly are you saying? That you're saying, my son, you might like to show me. What? We'll see. That's what the conversation now is going to revolve around. So at this point, we thought that the meaning of a master b'ayit l'chaverot b'yemot ha'geshamim meant someone who rents a house for the duration of the winter. That's what we thought it meant. So why is it that you can't get a house? Marshal yemot ha'geshamim, tuchiyogar inish beta b'yemot ha'geshamim, ogar l'kul yemot ha'geshamim. Because if somebody rents a house for the rainy season, he means the rainy season. The rainy season goes until after Pesach. That's what I don't understand. So then, and in the summer, if he rents it for the summer season, it doesn't mean for the summer season. So is it there too? Yimot HaChama Nami, if you are going to base on the cooler Yimot HaChama Arga, it means the summer season. You can't say in the summer you can get him out with 30 days notice, but in the winter it means the whole winter. And I said, why would that be? We haven't stumbled on that yet, yeah? Hello, the Yimot HaGeshamim, Hainu Taima, must be that it doesn't mean that. It means when it says Yemot HaGeshamim, it doesn't mean that he rented the house for the Yemot HaGeshamim. It means he didn't specify the length of the lease, and he went ahead now and he stumped, rented out to someone without specifying during the Yemot HaGeshamim. So therefore, if it's or during Yemot HaChama, so if it's during Yemot HaChama, so then it's easy to find a house. The point over here is that during the Yemot HaGeshamim, Hainu Taima, the Loshiach Beit Alamega, it must be because it's difficult to find a house.
Without specification.
Oh, it's Ema Seifa. So now, how do you understand the last part of the Mishnah? בפרחים, אחד ימות החמה ואחד ימות הגשמים, 12 חודש. ואילו מולו לאו ימי ספירות בימות הגשמים אפקווה. So there it says, if you're in a large town, so what's the shear? The shear is 12 months, fine.
No.
And if the 12 months turn out now to end in the middle of ימות הגשמים, so now it's okay, you're saying. You're out. And I thought that that was the problem, that it's lo shiach lemeger basis. So that can't be the reason either. Therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, you're missing the point in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about lahodia katani. The Mishnah is talking about notice, giving notice. It's not talking about when you can get the guy out. It's talking about how much notice is required for getting a guy out. That's the point. We originally thought it meant the assumption of the length of the lease. And there was no way that the mission made sense. If you're telling me that it means four Yemot HaGeshomim, so why wouldn't it mean four Yemot HaHama? If you're telling me that the lease can't be terminated in the middle of Yemot HaGeshomim, so why can't it be if you're in a big city? What's the difference if it's 12 months or if it's 30 days? Therefore, we said, no. We're not talking about the length of the lease at all. We're talking about letting the person know that you intend getting him out. That's the point. Stam. Now, by the way, not everybody holds a stam. There's some that don't have the gears of stam, in which case it would apply even if it weren't stam, because any lease was assumed to have an option for renewal unless you're informed otherwise. Or unless it says otherwise in the lease. But like this, if you say, this is a lease for a year, then at the end of the year it could be renewed unless the guy gives you 30 days notice before the lease is up. That's how others learn. Okay, if you have the lush and stam, then it means if you rent, you make a stam rental. You cannot get a guy out of that rental during the Yemot HaGeshomim at all. Now that extends from Sukkot to Pesach. Elohim Kain Hodio Shloshim Yom Meikara. You would have had to let him know 30 days before the beginning of the rainy season that he needed to get out so that he could find another house. That's the point. If you didn't let him know, then you cannot force him out. Tanya Namiyokin, the Brisa says it's the fairish. Tisha Amru Shloshim, the Kishamru Shema Sachodesh. These rules of 30 days or 12 months has nothing to do with lease termination. It has to do with notification. Lo Omru Elo Dio. It's talking about letting him know. And by the way, it works in both directions. Kishem Chamasir Tarik Lo Dia, Kastocher Tarik Lo Dia. A renter needs to let the renter know. The renter knows that he intends to leave at the end of the lease, if you hold without the lashon of stam, or that he intends to leave by such and such a date, giving 30 days or 12 months, as the case may be, depending where it's located, so that the person should have the time to do what he needs to do. The amalei yodatan, if you'd let me know, I would have gotten the kind of person that I want into the house. You can't tell me, well, there's plenty of people to rent. I'm not interested in renting to those plenty of people. I want to rent to my kind of people. And therefore, you have to let me know, too. What it seems to be saying is, if the rainy season has begun, you can't get him out at all. Even one day. What? I'm not closing him, Gummer. We said 30 days. What do you mean if the rainy season began? No. I mean, if one of those 30 days was already in the middle of the rainy season, the beginning of the rainy season, meaning you only gave him 29 days in advance of Sukkot to let him know. So it was the 16th of Elul, it's too late. Now don't think that when it says Shloshim Yom, it means approximately Shloshim Yom, a rose of Shloshim Yom. It means you need 30 full days within the Yemot HaChama when homes are available so that he can find himself a new apartment. Once it enters into Sukkot, within 30 days of Sukkot, then he gets to stay until after Pesach. But if he wants to raise the rent on him, he can raise the rent. That's great. You can't force him out, but you can raise the rent. You know what that is? That's holding a guy by the balls and saying, give me your coat willingly. I wouldn't think of taking you by putting any pressure on you, but I expect that you'll want to sell me your coat, won't you? That's exactly what you're doing over here. You're saying, Let's raise the rent. You'll pay me double, but of course, you can stay as long as you want. How about triple? Hell yeah, sure. Stay for 5 years. No problem. And I said, what kind of a locker is this? No, of course. Well, too, could be Ayakur, but he is talking about that houses have become more expensive in general. He's not raising it above. He's saying, look, if you're going to stay, at least I get the right to the normal rental. This is now a normal rental. I want a normal rental. You certainly can't go beyond the normal rental.
Okay.
They had a price beforehand, but I want you out. Now you're saying, but I don't want to get out because it's the rainy season. It's a new deal. Okay, so it's fine. But prices overall have gone up by 6%. You need to pay me an additional 6%. By the way, this is also true according to Rambam in the inverse. If the guy says that he didn't give notice within that amount of time that he's leaving, right? And the guy says, well, you can't leave. So he says, fine, I can't leave, but I'm also going to lower the rent. There too, he can lower the rent again by the same amount that the overall index of rentals has gone down. So in other words, the index defines both directions, whether the renter can take more, the renter can pay less.
So we're just saying that in the case that you start with the tenant, if the index has gone up, you can raise it.
Right. But it's certainly not, I mean, we didn't mean literally you can raise the rent without, I mean, that's obviously, that's, as Rashi says, that's the best, I mean, there's no better way to force a guy out than raising the rent. That's what we're not going to, that's why he's using a rather graphic description. There's no better way of getting a guy to part with his begotten. And they're claiming they're not putting on any pressure. Pita nafale beta. Now, it's obvious, a couple of things are obvious to us. For instance, if his own house collapses, and now he had two houses, one a rental house and one of the house he's living in, his house collapses. So he can go to the renter and he say, look, I'm very sorry about the fact that I have to give you notice, but I didn't have notice that my house was going to collapse either, and I need a place to live. And la difat minai, I mean, why should you come before me? And I own this property. The Rabbanim made this takana for you because I should have let you know. But how am I supposed to let you know that my house is going to collapse? You're not better than I am. Zavna. And it's also obvious that if he sold
the house, you can kick him out.
Yeah, because that's cheaper. On the other hand, if he sold the house, or if he bequeathed the house, or he gave it as a gift, so the renter can say to the heir or to the new owner, look, man, I mean, you don't have more rights than the person that gave you your rights. He couldn't get me out. You can't get me out. If he marries off his son, so now Chagina, and this is the only place where his son would have to live now. So now it depends. He had the Eshelo doing, if he knew the date of the wedding before, and it was within the 12 months, or in the big city, or within the 30 days, in a normal situation, so then he should have let him know. By the way, we'll do it. The ELO, but if there's no way for him to let him know, he can tell him, you're not any better. You don't come before my own family. This is Mamish, a modern story. A guy bought a boat full of wine and could not find a warehouse for the life of him. Now, lo ashkach dufelu tuvei, had nowhere in the town that he could store the wine, and he was getting desperate. So he goes over to this woman, and he says, he knows that she's got space. So he says, do you have any space to store my wine? She says, no. Anyway, he manages to get her to agree to marry him. Right? So he gives her kedusha, and Yavilei Duchta Laayoi. Of course, her dear lover, she gives her warehouse now, and he stores his wine. He meanwhile goes home. Ozal obeys. He says, "Well, I'm just going to travel home, and arrange for our future together." And he sends her a divorce. So shut out on, he sends it to her. She gets the get. So Ozalahi, she goes and she hires Sabalim, which she pays with the wine to throw this wine out into the street.
Mamish.
Nikolai's, but she goes and she hires Savolini, nails them, pays them with the actual wine that he has, and off to say, throws out the wine, goes to the shill, and she throws it out into the street.
I know that song.
So anyway, so the guy sues her in the end, by Ravuna Breda of Yeshua. So they come to Ravuna Breda of Yeshua. He says, very good, Kasher Asar, Kenya Shalo, Mulo Yashuv Barosho. Indeed, as he has done, so shall it be done to him. His evil shall be turned upon his head. And lo mi vay chotze v'lo kai mi liagra. And lafimu chotze v'kai mi liagra. This is true, not only in our case, in which it was clear that she had no intention generally of renting out the warehouse, because before he made his overtures to her and he wanted to rent the warehouse, she said no. So she wasn't planning on renting out the warehouse yet anyway. But even if it was an available warehouse for renting, she can throw him out in the street, because she could say, anybody else in the world I'm happy to rent to. But lecha, to you, I have no intention of ever entering. The Damita like the Arya Arba. To me, you look like a lion in crouch. And I don't go near people like you. No, she doesn't have to give notice. There's a question as to whether, if she doesn't give a notice, whether she would be mechuyev to see to it that it was protected. Or should she hire somebody to watch it, paying him that's the whole machlokas of poskim, about what your responsibilities are to somebody who fools you like this.
Do you have to tell them that you've done it?
That's part of the machlokas. Yipshim and Gamliel Omer shal nachtonim v'shal tzaba'in shalosh shanim. Why? Tanab it makes a hectic fan merubah. As we already mentioned, as a machlokas, Rashi learns this means literally, that for some reason, nachtonim and tzaba'in give long-term credit. It's a little hard to imagine why that would be so. And therefore, they learned that Hakefan Ruba means it is just so difficult to move a store like that with its special needs that you need the moving. Is Ruba. It involves a lot of pirka. Yeah, and they need, as Richie can tell us, they need 3 years to find a new place.
They're going
to
move so well, right? They're
going to
close up shop.
That's why you close that shop. You just give up. I mean, it's just too much. Yeah. That's basically what happened. He was not David Gupta. That is the one. For everything. Yeah. That's why we figured.
Sit on the Yerushalmi, or at least get that 12-month journey.
Running a pizza shop is a booming business.